all we're doing every day. It's just, you know, what can we do a little bit different? What process can we define in order to make things run a bit smoother in our organization? And one of the frustrations that we hear most often from people all around the globe where Disney Institute travels is, why can't I get my people to do what I want them to do? Have you ever said that out? You're laughing. Okay, what's your name? Beth?
Betty.
You're making me giggle. Because now you're laughing. Why are you laughing?
Because what you said is just very true.
Because you've said it too, haven't you?
I've said that a bunch of times.
Why can't, what line of business?
Martial arts.
Martial arts. Wow, I would think that would be much easier to get people to do what you want.
In theory.
But no?
You know, theoretically.
Only if I'm chasing you, probably.
We can get them to do this, we just can't get them to do like this.
But it's a thing, isn't it? Do you, and you ever sit and you kind of want to shake your hair out. But why can't I just get my people to do, why can't I just get them to be friendly on the phone? Why can't I get them to smile? Sometimes it's as simple as, why can I not just get them to smile? Why won't they smile? Well, believe it or not, there is a place at Disney where we have a training class that we teach people to smile. And we'll talk about that today as well. So your frustrations may lie in the selection process. It may lie in the training process. It may be in the overall engagement of your people, you know, or maybe it's an issue in any or all of these categories. So together, we're going to work together to provide some solutions for you today. So thank you for what you've given us up here, because we're going to come back to that throughout the day today. So you may notice you've got a workbook on your table. What I'd like you to do, please, if you will turn in your workbook to page, I think it's a V. It's a page that says Iconology. I want to first give you a little bit of information about what your participant guide has sort of in store for you. So you're going to see these icons throughout our time together. And the one that you see in the center, Insight, that's probably the one that if you remembered one of them, that would be the one I would want you to remember. Because an insight is a proposition that states principles and underlying logic behind Disney's approach to whatever it is we're talking about. The suitcase is a reminder to you that insights are not bound by geography. Insights go along with you. So anything that you see is that is an insight is going to be context neutral, so it's not specific to Disney. It can travel along any sort of geographical region and any type of organization. The next one is a common mistake. You may notice Goofy tripping over the hurdle. So a common mistake would be any kind of business practice that detracts from sustaining the desired behaviors that you want in your organization. The next one is a great idea. A great idea is typically for us a tip that we have gleaned from an insight. So Tinkerbell is almost always going to spring off of an insight that we talk about. Engagement, you've got our characters together, best buddies here. Engagement are ideas within each module that promote commitment to your organization, not compliance. Because that's a big focus of what we're going to talk about today. We're not looking for people to be compliant. We're looking for people to be committed. So when you see an engagement icon, that's another tip about how you can get to commitment rather than compliance. Doc that you hear over here, that you see over here, Doc is our introspection, because he wears glasses. He wears glasses. Whenever we encounter Doc, that's going to be 5 minutes of personal reflection time on whatever the topic is that we've been talking about. Just because sometimes, you know, your brain moves really quick, and if you don't capture it right then, sometimes you forget it. At least I do. I mean, I gotta have a pen with me all the time. Age is not a good thing, you know, because now I have to write everything down. So we're gonna give you 5 minutes at different intervals throughout our time together to just sort of capture your thoughts. And then finally, all of our dwarves together, it's off to work we go. There's gonna be times in our day that we're going to give you adaptation time. So it's time for you to take the insights that we've presented with you and think about how it might work at your organization. So I wanted to give you a little bit of insight into your workbook. So let's get back to our common frustration. Our people just aren't doing what we want them to do. Everybody wants performance, right? And everybody wants specific behaviors. in your organization. So you have, whether you've articulated them or written them down or not, there are a specific set of behaviors that you would like your people to exhibit. And if they are not doing that, that becomes a business problem for you. And it might even be the reason why you're here today. You know, we're not perfect at Disney, but I will tell you this, our commitment to making sure that those desired behaviors are exhibited as frequently as possible is one of the strongest commitments in our organization. At Disney, our consistent business results are driven by our overmanaging certain things that most companies undermanage or ignore. And that is a key source of what differentiates us. We've learned where to be intentional, where others may be unintentional. And we're on page 1 in your book. So there's a word there that's sort of a key word for this phrase, and that word is overmanage. But I want your input on that word. What do you instantly think?
I'm a negative guy, so when I hear that, I think when my boss overmanages me, and I say, step back, I can handle it.
Yeah, because what does overmanage equate with in your head?
I think micromanage.
Micromanage, right? Yeah, the two equate together. Well, I will tell you, the reason that you're always going to see that word in quotes is because for us, it does not mean micromanage. It does not. But I want to go ahead and dispel that myth and get it out right now because I know your head just automatically goes there, doesn't it? And you think, overmanage, great. Like I really want somebody like standing over my shoulder watching every behavior that I exhibit, right? So for us, what we mean by overmanage, and this is in your book, we think about things differently or to a different degree than other organizations may. We pay extraordinary attention to the detail. And we strategically place emphasis that is both greater than and different from what you might typically hear as a corporate best practice. So that's what we mean when we say overmanage. It's thinking differently and to a greater degree. So let me give you an example of what I mean by this. There is a show that you will find a couple of the parks around the globe. One of them happens to be at the Walt Disney World Resort in Florida. And it's a show called Festival of the Lion King. Has anybody in the room ever experienced it in one of our parks? Festival of the Lion King. So it's after the show, The Lion King. It is somewhat reminiscent of the Broadway production of The Lion King. You're familiar with The Lion King, right? Simba? No? Everybody? Okay. So in this stage production, there are life-size puppets, there are characters, there are tumble monkeys, they're athletic gymnast monkeys, there's a fire twirler, there's dancers, there's singers. There's over 50 people on the stage at any given time that are a part of this show. So as a guest, there's a lot to look at. And you're probably going to take some time as a guest to look at all of the different elements that you see on that stage. You're going to focus a little time on the tumble monkeys. You're going to look over to Timon because he's kind of funny. You may even take some time to look at the big puppets that are in the room as well. But there's a lot going on. Now, one of those puppets happens to be an elephant. And that elephant blinks. Now, does an elephant puppet really have to blink? Particularly when you have 50 other people that are doing things on a stage. She doesn't have to blink, but she does. And there's a puppeteer inside that elephant that makes that elephant blink. So the puppeteer is trained how to make the puppet blink, and the cast of the Festival of the Lion King are trained to watch the puppet and make sure that the puppet blinks. Okay, so for those of you in your head, you're probably trying to imagine this elephant and blinking and puppets. And so let me give you just a taste of what Festival of the Lion King looks like, and watch for the elephant. Now, she's really big, so you won't have to look too far to be able to find her.
Thank you.
This is what we mean when we say overmanage. There's a puppeteer inside this elephant that makes her blink. And every single person that works in the cast of the show or that works in the operation of the theater is trained to watch and make sure she blinks. And the stage manager let us know, if she's not blinking, there could be 7, 8, 10 people right after the show that are right in my face saying, Eleanor was not blinking. Did you see her? Because Eleanor, I didn't see her blink at all during that show. That's what we mean when we say overmanage. Paying attention to the details and paying attention in such a strong way that everyone that is engaged in that particular department is involved in all of the different details. So in addition to the elephant blinking, you know, they would let us know if a tumble monkey fell, or they would let us know, you know, if Timon was in the wrong place, that he, you know, was supposed to be somewhere else, or that they would let us know anything that went awry during the show that shouldn't have been that way. This is just one of the many elements of the show. But I pointed out to you because this is part of the guest experience. It's part of the rich detail that is Disney's Animal Kingdom and that is specifically this show. So whatever it is that's part of your guest experience, how are you overmanaging it? Overmanaging it to make sure that you have that same quality, rich guest experience every single time. So that, you know, I think, Simon, you had your hand up that you've seen Festival of the Lion King. So every time he comes to see it, does he see Eleanor blink?
He will now.
He'll be watching. Yeah, he'll be watching for it now. So this is sort of a thesis, if you will, of everything that the Disney Institute does. Everything that we do is we bring to you sort of the reenactment of how we overmanage. Yesterday, it's how we overmanage leadership. And today, how we overmanage selection, training, and engagement. We'll be back tomorrow, I don't know how many of you will be, to talk about the overmanaging of the guest experience, something that we call quality service. So speaking of the Disney Institute, let me give you just a bit of insight into, you know, kind of how we think in terms of this idea of overmanaging. We overmanage to get to results, and I don't want you to think of results simply as money. Results can be anything that is your final product. You know, results could be just a really quality stage show, like Festival of the Lion King. It could be just a quality guest experience when a guest is with you. Or it could be money. That could be the results that you're looking at. So we're overmanaging in these categories. The category of leadership, of culture, of customer experience, of brand loyalty, and of creativity and innovation. So we want you to think of it today as if we got to take one of the pieces out of this puzzle, and today we're going to take the red piece, the piece that says culture. And if we could just focus on that red piece and overmanaging, what would that look like? Well, it looks like this. Selection, training, communication, and care. That's going to be the focus for us today. Now, you may notice there's a big word that's missing. Anybody figure it out? I'll give you a hint. It's in the title of the program. Engagement. So you're looking at this and you're like, well, I see engagement there, but it's in parentheses. It, you know, it doesn't have a very big spot here on this circle. Probably ought to talk about that. So what do you think about engagement? You know, why is engagement not one of the four modules that we're going to talk about today? Absolutely. It's a part. Oh, do we have new characters today? Oh, I just love this guy. I'm so made it for you this morning. That is exactly correct. Because engagement is something that runs through everything that you do. Engagement should be part of your selection process. It should be part of your training process. It should be part of the way that you communicate with your people and how you care for them. Even in an imperfect environment, which all of us have, us included, this is possible. So the main thesis of what we're going to do all day today is this. Not just the Disney Institute, but specifically this program is that it is possible to create a workforce that consistently demonstrates desired behaviors. And there could be some of you sitting here right now, we're on page 5 in your book, that are thinking, how is that possible? Because can you control for every single person in your organization? Nope. Not unless you maybe have them wired up or something. You can't. You can't account for everyone. But, as we will share with you in just a second, there are some things that you can do to ensure that this is more likely to happen. So think about it in the context of a sports team. Any of you have teams that you root for that are... No? Only me? Yeah, football? Who do you root for? The Giants? I root for the Redskins. I apologize.
Sorry.
I'm from South Texas. And you may be saying, why is a girl from South Texas root for the Redskins? Because I went to Baylor. And Robert Griffin III is now their quarterback. It's uncomfortable for me, too. I'm not quite there yet. You know, I'm trying to, like, I'm going to stand closer to you today because you've got that color on. Because I'm still not comfortable with the Redskins. But, you know, I like the one guy. I like the Giants, too. So tell me, what is it that makes the Giants successful behaviorally? Behaviorally. What do they do to win games? What does any sports team do? They work as a team. They practice. They're consistent. So if you're a kicker, what do?
You kick.
You kick. Correctly.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. If it's your job to kick, you kick correctly. You know, if it's your job, if you're Eli Manning, you know, if it's your job to throw, you throw correctly. If it's your job to catch and run, you both catch and then run. So sports teams, and if you sort of look over time at different sports teams, the ones that are the most successful are the ones that exhibit the appropriate behaviors more frequently. I mean, you can take this into the context of anything. You could take it into the context that you just mentioned earlier in martial arts, right? If you're successful, you're probably exhibiting the correct behavior more frequently. You're doing what you were taught to do correctly more frequently. That's what we're talking about. And that's how you get to having a workforce that demonstrates the desired behaviors, by doing the right things more frequently. So the questions to ask yourself during our time together are you hiring the right people? Are you training those people correctly? Are you effectively communicating with them? And are you caring for them the way they need to be cared for? They're rhetorical right now, but they're things to have in your head as we walk through content today. Maybe you will find that one of the answers to those questions sparks some new thinking. So to get sort of deeper into that original question of why aren't my people behaving the way I want them to, we need to all understand that what you have is an engagement challenge. Engagement running through everything we do. So it's a key ingredient for ensuring that your employees perform the way you want them to. By increasing the number of highly engaged people, you will have more people performing the desired behaviors or doing what you want them to do. This is what we're all trying to do, right? So let me give you a visual of how we're working on it at Disney. So this is just a typical bell curve. This is a bell curve that's going to exist in any kind of business anywhere in the world. You're going to have people on the left side of the curve. Those are the highly uncommitted. Those are the people, you may have said these words out loud, they just come get the paycheck and leave. They're not committed to your organization. In fact, what's interesting about this group, there may be something in your organization they are actively against. These may be the people who sit in the break room and sort of poison other people. Because there's something about the organization or maybe a specific person in the organization that they are actively against. You've got the middle section. This is the largest section on our bell curve. They're neither committed nor uncommitted. They come, they do their job, they behave appropriately most of the time. Sometimes they don't, they slip. These are the people that are up for grabs. These are the people that can be that workforce that exhibits desired behaviors. Because right now, they don't have any qualms against you or any part of the organization. They're just sort of coming to work, they do their thing, they go home. And then you've got the people on the right. And unfortunately, this is the smallest part of the bell curve. These are the highly committed people. You can think of them in your head, can't you? The people in your organization who do it right every time. They exhibit the desired behaviors every single time that they have an interaction at work. And their little faces are in your head, aren't they? Because you can imagine who they are very quickly. And if you've ever said the words, boy, I wish I had 14 of that one. Because they're just that good. Well, this is where we want to be. So what we do at Disney, we do this every day that we come to work. We work to push the curve. And we're going to talk about this throughout our day together. Pushing the curve to the right. So you push the curve to the right so that you have more people performing the correct behaviors more often. It's sustained improvement in your organizational performance. And it requires an increase in the number of highly engaged people. So to get here, that may be what you're saying in your head, how do I get here? How do I begin to push the curve to the right? You have to engage some levers. So there are a lot of different levers, engagement levers, that you can sort of pull to get those people to move to the right. There's four specific ones that we're going to talk about today. And our specific levers, you have them here on page 7 in your participant guide. Put the right people in the right roles. Provide people with high quality training. Carefully listen to employees' viewpoints. And care for employees. And as I mentioned, there are many different levers. These are the four we're going to focus on. And it doesn't matter, this is like an insight. It doesn't matter what kind of organization that you work with or where in the world you work. These levers are something that work human-wide, not necessarily business-wide. So every human being will respond to these. So no engagement is sort of a twofold street. It's first rational engagement, and then it is next emotional engagement. So what you're going to hear a lot of us talk about today is the emotional engagement side. Because rational engagement, it typically happens once, and then you have just a little bit of time to sort of move it from rational to emotional. Rational engagement happens when you get the job offer. Is it the job I want? Could I do this job? Does it pay what I need it to pay? Or at least enough that I can do all right? Is it close enough to home? You know, or is it in a city where I want to be? So that's all the rational questions you ask yourself when you take a job. And then when you come on the job is when emotional engagement should begin. Now, again, can you account for every single person? No. But what we're going to do today is talk about creating an overall environment where this is what's happening. Where overall, you're working to every day push the curve to the right. So every day there's another one that becomes highly engaged and they move over to the right-hand side of the curve. And tomorrow, you got another one that moves over to the right-hand side of the curve. So basically, we're going to focus a lot about people. Types of people, types of performance in the everyday workplace. The distinguishing factor of every business that's represented in this room is your people. Now, you can have an amazing infrastructure. We have an amazing infrastructure here at Disney. But it's our people that make a difference. And there's really no one in our organization that understands that better than a woman by the name of Meg Crofton. Meg Crofton is the president of Walt Disney Parks and Resorts, United States and France. So under her purview are over 90,000 cast members. Here in Anaheim, in Orlando, Florida, and outside of Paris at the Disneyland Paris Resort. So if there's anybody in our organization who truly understands people and engagement, it is absolutely Meg. So we wanted to be able to share some of her words with you this morning as we kick off a conversation about engagement.
Good morning, Meg.
Good morning, Omar. Have a great day. I love this moment. The park is dressed and perfect. The day is about to begin, and we're awaiting the arrival of the morning's first guest. It's like getting ready for the curtain to go up on a great, big, wonderful show. I started here as a cast member in 1977. Since then, I've worked in both operations and staff positions, in marketing, lodging, convention sales, and human resources. I've helped open our resorts in Paris and Hong Kong. And today, it is my privilege to lead our operations teams in Disneyland Paris, at Disneyland in California, and here at Walt Disney World in Florida. 50 years ago, as he spoke about our parks, Walt Disney said, "You can dream, create, design, and build the most wonderful place in the world, but it requires people to make the dream a reality." Over the years, I've had countless conversations with guests, cast members, and business professionals from around the globe, and I've seen firsthand the truth of what Walt said. I have learned that far and away, the most important things we possess here at Disney are our people and our unique culture. Those are the elements that truly make us Disney. And to illustrate that, I'd like to do something that comes very naturally to us here at Disney. I'd like to tell you a story. Not long ago, a mother and her young daughter were visiting one of our parks, and they encountered a construction fence. The little girl was carrying Belle, her prized doll, and she listened as her mother explained that something wonderful and new was being built. Then, our young guest apparently decided that Belle needed a closer look because she threw her doll over the fence. The mother was flabbergasted. She approached some of our cast members, and they told her we'd be happy to retrieve Belle, but it would take a little while, as the fenced-off area was an active construction site. Our cast learned that the family was staying at one of our resorts and promised to return Belle to their room. Then putting on hard hats, safety vests and glasses, and other safety gear required in a construction area, our cast went searching for Belle. They found her in just a few minutes, but the doll was much worse for the wear. She had landed in a mud puddle, her dress was ruined, and her hair was a mess. In most cases, that wouldn't have been a problem. We would simply find the same doll in one of our shops and present a new one to our guest with our compliments. But this particular Belle doll had been discontinued. We didn't have another. So what do you do in a case such as that? Return the muddy doll with our apologies? That just wouldn't be magical. So here's what our cast did instead. First, Belle was taken to cosmetology, where one of our stylists cleaned her up and washed and set her hair. The next stop was wardrobe, to the same seamstresses who create gowns for the real Princess Belle. They measured the doll and designed and sewed a new dress fit for royalty. Our cast knew that our little guest would be wondering where her friend had been all this time. So Belle was taken next to a character meet and greet, where one of our photographers could take pictures of Belle socializing and spending a royal afternoon with her fellow princesses. The pictures were arranged in an album, and our cast delivered it, together with the freshly coiffed Belle in her new dress, to our little guest, just as she and her family were about to leave for dinner. The little girl was delighted, and her mother was astounded. She sent us a thank you letter and described the moment as pure Disney magic. You know, that story is remarkable, but it is not unusual. These are the sort of memories we produce every day here at Disney. No executive orchestrates them. No memo or directive stipulates how they are to be created. We don't have a checklist for such things. But we do work to preserve a culture and provide an environment in which going the extra mile is the most natural thing in the world. Like that young mother, guests often refer to the experience in our parks and our resorts as Disney magic. Yet it's not magic that makes it work. It's the method. It is a deliberate process that begins with the way we recruit and lies at the core of our training, a process that is continuously reinforced by leaders and peers alike. And the result of this is more than a loyal and happy guest. It's a loyal and happy cast as well, because few things feel as good as knowing you have helped create a happy memory, a memory that will last a lifetime. Over the decades, we have demonstrated that Disney's approach works well, regardless of the language being spoken or where the interaction takes place. It works well in Asia, it works well in Europe, and it works well here. Magic is a universal language, and I wish you and your team all the best as you tap into your organization's own special brand of magic. So for you, what stood out from what Meg shared with you? Is there any key phrase or message? Yes, sir. Say that again.
Describe her role as a privilege.
Her role is a privilege. And I will tell you, as graceful in demeanor as she appears on a screen, she is the same in person. Yeah, she considered her role a privilege. How many of us walk into our workplace every day and we say to ourselves, you know, I am so blessed and lucky to be here? I bet we don't often do that.
I was just going to say what I took from that, what I wrote like, was that you said there was no memo, no executive decree that said this has to happen this way, that the people in power made the experience come about whatever way they saw fit.
And I have to tell you, that's my favorite too.
And you also have, related to that, you have the cultural norms that you set, that going the extra mile is normal. Not that it's an exception, not that it's something unusual, but it's just what we do, what everyone does. That there's no pushback on it. There is. Of course we'll give it a doll.
So when we see, right, when a Disney cast member sees a doll like that, our first thought is, how can we make it right? How can we make it better? How can we make this, instead of, well, you know, we found the doll, put it in the bag and give it back. But I have to tell you, that's my favorite part too, that there is no executive mandate that says this is how we do it. It's simply a part of our culture. So every day we're looking for those opportunities.
And I appreciate the fact that they wanted to make it right even though it wasn't their fault.
Right. It's not our fault that your daughter threw the doll there.
Yeah.
You know, but unfortunately, we do sort of have to bear the burden of it now because it's in a construction zone. So that is our area, you know, and we need to retrieve it. So no, it's not our fault that the daughter decided to heave the doll over the gate. Who does that? Seriously. I guess if you're that age, you probably do. But we do know at that point, you know, there is something that's owed, you know, back. You know, we want to make it right. It's reinforced by leaders and peers alike. So it might be that someone sees a behavior and a leader comes up to you and says, hey, I saw that interaction with the guest. That was really great. But it might not be that at all. You know, Bruce at the back table, we're peers. So it might be that he sees something that I do or I see something. And I say to Bruce, wow, that was really great. That was an amazing guest interaction. Like, I'm totally going to remember that and do that next time. Anything else that you heard that you thought, well, that resonates with me? That's what I'm going to remember. Well, I will tell you, while we've been focusing on that overmanage part, we need to now tell you how we do it. So the how part is pretty simple. First of all, it's done with our people, and I think this is a good time to introduce some people to you. So in the back of the room, I want to introduce some folks to you because they're going to be with you all day. So the first person, we call these people sort of the wind beneath our wings. You know, if sodas arrive or if food comes or if coffee is replenished, it's probably because of Judy, who's out of the room for a moment, or Lori, who is in the room.
So anytime you have a question that has anything to do with your comfort or food or restrooms or anything like that, look for either one of them because they're more than happy to assist you. In addition, there are some other really cool folks in the back of the room. So Ryan and Bruce, can you all stand for a second?
Absolutely.
So Ryan and Bruce are with the Disney Institute, but the coolest part about the two of them is that they're based right here in California. So can you just give a brief little about who you are? Oh, good gracious.
Well, hello, I'm Ryan Janetta. I've been with the company for 12 years now, for the Walt Disney Company. Actually, first started in Florida, but now out here in California. And so I get to facilitate with my good friend, Bruce Kimbrough.
Yeah, almost 32 years here. Started with Jungle Cruise. I'll be with you tomorrow. And we do anchor the efforts here for the Disney Institute.
Oh, I love that. Anchor the efforts.
Great to have you here.
I love that. In addition, there's one other gentleman in the back of the room. And this is a commitment, oh, just for a moment. You don't have to speak at all. But let me, you know, kind of give you the why behind it. So, you know, it's important that everyone in our organization sort of know and see what we do and understand our business, right? So Joseph, he sort of runs the operational side of the Disney Institute. We're sort of three sides. We're a sales division, we're an operational division, and we're a content division. So Joseph runs the operational division of the Disney Institute, and he's sort of new to it, kind of not. He's been with Disney for many years and then left for a while and came back. And so he's come out to California as well to sort of see everything that is the California operation. So if you had operational questions about Disney Institute, Joseph may be a gentleman you want to talk to today. So that's those five individuals. My name is Austin Brock, and I've been with the Disney Company for 17 years. During that time, during that 17 years, I've actually spent all of it working in selection, training, and engagement. So the first part of my Disney career was spent in the merchandise division, first as a cast member and then as a leader. So you have to know engagement was a huge part of what my job was, being a leader in the merchandise operation. I spent 7 years of the 17 working in our casting division. So I was part of our college program hiring process. I set up credit-bearing programs for students to get college credit for being on our internship program, and I placed about 2,500 students a year in jobs. So I spent a lot of time working in that selection process. Now, and for 6 years now, I've been with the Disney Institute, primarily in the training function of training, not new cast members, but in the training of businesses that come to us that learn, you know, want to learn how Disney does things. My role even changed a year ago, and now I primarily develop content and get the opportunity to travel to share the new content with the other members of the team. So some housekeeping things for us today. You've got a name badge. The name badge is really, really helpful. It's not for what you might think. We're going to actually leave the room at some point today, so having that badge on becomes really important so that we can, you know, herd and gather and make sure we don't lose anybody on our little adventure. There will be beverages in the room all throughout the day today. So if you need anything or if you need to run to the restroom or anything like that, please feel free. If you've got a phone call that you need to take, you know, we completely understand. Business doesn't end because you're here. So if you need to step out for any reason, you feel free to do that. There are smoking areas, and I may have to defer to Ryan. Are they directly outside?
Directly outside.
So turn to the left and go directly outside those glass doors so there is a smoking area. If you've had any, we've had a couple of people have questions about tickets this morning. If you had any questions about tickets for the Disneyland Park or Disney's California Adventure, Judy and Lori will be there to help you with ticket questions. And then finally, you see our little friends, Timon and Pumbaa, up there in the corner. We are wild about safety. So I want to make sure that I talk to you a bit about safety today. No fire drills or anything, so that should be a quiet day in terms of that. We shouldn't be having to vacate any place really quickly. The weather today, here's the beautiful part. I'm so excited about this personally, because being from Florida, I'm used to the hot weather. It's supposed to cool down almost 10 degrees today. So that's going to be really good, particularly for our walk a little bit later in the day. We are going to be doing some walking. So if you are not prepared for that in terms of shoes, it's something I just wanted to kind of put out there and let you know. The walk, how long would you say, Ryan, that it takes to, 20 minutes? 20 minutes over, 20 minutes back.
And then we will probably be standing for 30 to 40 minutes. So just to sort of manage that part. So if there's any, with regard to, you know, your own personal comfort and safety, if there's anything about that trip that might be questionable for you, please let the folks in the back know and we can, you know, do what we can to help you out to make that more comfortable. All right, so back to people. It's back to talking about people. In your head, you're going, where we last left our heroes, they were going to tell us how we do it. So Meg shared with you what we do. Let's share with you how we do it. This is how. By overmanaging, use that word again, certain critical human resource processes, you will create highly engaged employees who will consistently exhibit desired behaviors. Those critical human resource processes are selection, training, how you communicate and care for your people. And if you manage these pretty well, you will begin to shift the curve to the right. So I'm going to come back to the question that we talked about at the very beginning. And I actually want to get some of your responses. The question is, why aren't your people doing what you'd like them to do? Any ideas?
Unmotivated.
Pardon me?
Unmotivated.
They're unmotivated. They're unmotivated to act appropriately. Any other reasons, sir?
Undertrained.
Not empowered, or don't feel empowered.
Okay, undertrained. So they simply don't know the desired behavior. They are not empowered. So no one has said to them, you know, you can do this if you want to. They're directionless. No rudder, right?
Or inconsistent.
Directionless or inconsistent direction. I like that one. Sometimes I'm told to do this, sometimes I'm told to do that. Any more?
Wrong incentives.
Wrong? Ooh. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So frequently, you might have behaviors you desire, but there might be incentives against those behaviors. So, for example, you talk about putting in the extra effort,
yes.
But at the same time, if you create a process where someone who has, say, they're going over to deal with it all, and they have to create a paperwork trail
right.
for fixing it all, you just created a huge incentive not to bother. Maybe
right.
you happen to not find it, or throw it in a plastic bag.
Yes. Yeah, if I tell you, you know what, provide your guest an outstanding experience, but oh, by the way, you work at a call center, you have 4 minutes to do it. I've completely countermanded what I just told you. That's a really good one. Incented the wrong way. Any others?
They have the right beliefs.
Excellent. Say it again.
They have the right beliefs.
They don't have the right beliefs. And I'm going to say when that happens, could be a selection problem. These are all great. And every single one of them happens probably in every one of our organizations every day. Happens at Disney. All of these things can happen very, very easily. We work every single day to make sure they don't, but again, we cannot control. We cannot control. You know, on our coasts, it's a pretty scary number of people, really. In Florida, we have over 60,000 people that work at the Walt Disney World Resort. We're over 30,000 here. Is that correct? I'm sorry? 22. So over 20,000 people here. I mean, it's a huge number. It's a huge number of people, over 80,000 people, to try and get to move the same direction every day. You know, so are there, you know, certainly days that we falter.
Austin, check my math on this real quick.
Yeah.
So if it's 58,000 people in Orlando that turn over 300% a year.
There's about 64,000 in Orlando, roughly. Depends on the time of year. And that's not the correct turnover number.
It's not.
Mm-hmm. No, our turnover is in Florida is significantly less than industry average. And industry average in the hospitality industry is 20%. So we do it in terms of percentage rather than role. Because some
right.
roles have zero turnover.
Right.
Some roles, you know, have very fast turnover. So we, you know, the industry standard for hospitality is around 20%, and we're below.
Per year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're below it. Now, are we happy with that number? Are we happy, you know, is there anybody in the hospitality industry that's happy with 20%? Probably not. We're not. So we're trying to, every day, we look at new ways to engage, to keep you as long as we can, and reduce sort of the gap. So if you're clear and deliberate in your selection, training, communication, input, and care processes, two things are going to happen. People always understand how to behave, and they will not improvise. So we're going to spend some time actually, you know, it'll come up again, that idea of improvisation is dangerous. Dangerous in an organization. People that go rogue. So we're always looking for ways so that you don't go rogue. Over the course of our time together, we're going to talk about that going rogue, that improvising piece again. But for now, we're actually going to move into a discussion of desired behaviors, and specifically around culture. You heard Meg mention this already, that idea of culture. Because your culture is defined by how people behave, the best employee is the one who most perfectly aligns with your desired behaviors. So what do we mean when we say desired behaviors? Does that make sense? How would you define desired behaviors? What you want them to be doing. Very simple. What you want them to be doing. What is the appropriate way to perform? James Heskett, you see the little quote up here from the culture cycle on page 9. The way we do things around here. That is desired behaviors. It's the observable manifestation of your culture. Every time an employee behaves in whatever manner they do, they're telling somebody about your organization. They're telling you whether you're guest-driven, whether you're safety-driven, whether you're courtesy-driven. They're telling you in every single behavior. Behaviors reflect assumptions about how people think and act, as well as the values and beliefs that members of the organization share. And when you combine them all together, all the good ones, you have your desired culture. Now let me show you something. You probably came here today thinking there would not be any math. So I'm going to, you know, this is simple math. So if we say culture equals the desired behaviors, okay? And then we say desired behaviors equals results. Now, if we just do simple math, and those two cancel each other out, right? Because they're the same thing. Culture equals results. So if you think about this for a second, if someone were to tell you the culture of your organization is actually completely indicative of the results that your organization will have, whether that is a behavioral result or a monetary result, could be either. It doesn't have to be money-driven, but it could be. So if someone told you the final tally of the results that your organization has in a year will be completely affected by your culture, would you spend more time thinking about your culture? Yes. Wouldn't we all? Well, it does. Because every behavior, I'm telling you who Disney is. With every behavior that you see today, with every behavior you see from me, from Bruce, from Ryan, from Judy, from Lori, from Joe, all of us, we're telling you who we are. It's kind of scary. Isn't that scary a little bit? A little bit of trepidation in your heart? I mean, take it out of the context of your organization for a minute, but think about organizations that you interact with. You ever had a bad interaction with an organization and you thought, is that really how they are? Is that really how that organization is? Is that that one person or is that the whole organization? And then you have three or four of those kinds of interactions, and all of a sudden, you don't fly that airline anymore. You don't shop at that grocery store anymore. You don't go to that mall anymore. You don't buy that car brand anymore. And then, what are the implications of culture? I mean, if you're a car brand, wow. Because cars aren't cheap, right? And you have just taken your money and you've gone somewhere else.
And if it doesn't just happen to you, it happens, maybe I'm with you when that happens, and then I go and I tell 2,000 of my closest friends on social media, then what happens? So that's why behaviors become so important. Because behavior equals culture, and culture equals results. So in terms of engagement, on page 10, remember, employee engagement is also simply deeply rooted in your culture. So let me give you an illustration of that. Yes, sir?
I don't have a page.
You don't have a page 10? Well, that's kind of fun.
That's an important idea.
Does that mean it's a special book? Is it a prize? Does everyone else have a 10?
Yeah.
You have both 9 and 10.
I don't have 9 either.
So you need to come take the character at your leisure, because apparently that was the special book.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit for you. Thank you for sharing and not just sitting there going, well, talking about it then, I don't really have that. So I do want to read you. This is from a letter. The letter was written by Roy Disney. It was written to the employees. And the letter is called Walt is Gone. It was Walt's wish that when the time came, he would have built an organization with the creative talents to carry on as he had established and directed it through the years. Today, this organization has been built, and we will carry out his wish. And I apologize, I don't believe you actually have an appendix with that letter, but we do have the letter in the back of the room. So if it's something you want to read the whole letter, you're welcome to do that. It's in a longer guide. So when Walt passed away, our directive was simple. All of this has been set up for you. Continue to do business in the way that you were taught to do it. We didn't deviate. We didn't make a change. We didn't panic. We didn't. You know, organizational culture is dynamic. It moves and it shifts. But we knew how we had been trained to act. And that doesn't change. The only thing that changed is now our current chairman, Tom Staggs, he's actually added another word to it, and he's added the word vibrancy. And his idea, and you got some of his thoughts here in blue on page 10, is that you must keep your culture vibrant. And what he means by vibrant is interesting, engaging, something that your employees want to be a part of. If you don't kind of keep your story fresh or vibrant, then they don't have a reason to stick around. They don't have a reason to be loyal to you because you haven't created anything interesting for them. If we spend all of our time creating wonderful things for our guests and none of our time doing it internally, then we lose our vibrancy. So you've heard it from Tom Staggs, you've heard it from Roy Disney, you've heard it from Meg about the importance of culture. To further kind of clarify it, let's break it down for you. There's that letter. Into four pieces. Heritage and tradition, shared values, language and symbols, and traits and behaviors. So we're on page 11 in your book. So I'm gonna briefly go through these and then give you time to think about it for a moment. So heritage and traditions, what are the stories of your heritage of the beginning of your organization? So what are the stories that you share with everyone? Who founded the organization? When was it founded? How was it founded? You know, what were the cool, funny things, or what was the adversity that was part of that? That is one of the things that every Disney employee knows. We know our stories. The second are shared values. So what is the value system that you use to make decisions? We've given you ours. There are 7 of them. Openness, respect, courage, honesty, integrity, diversity, and balance. So how do you make your decisions? The third, language and symbols, is perhaps my favorite. Because we all have language, right, that's specific to our business. Is there anyone from healthcare in the room? Because that's my favorite. Because you have, like, more language and symbols and acronyms than even we do. And I thought we had a bunch of them. I think it's healthcare, Disney, and the military that have probably the most of any companies I've ever met. And does your language work well for you? And is it something that's still appropriate around guests?
You know, so how do you communicate? What is that language? And then what are your symbols? Symbols are kind of a funny thing. So symbols, you know, if you've got a business card, you have a symbol. Because there's probably one on your business card. But have you ever met somebody and they've given you their card and you looked at the symbol and you went, I have no idea what this is. What kind of company are you? Oh, we're a technology company. Well, what are all these little triangles for? What is this? Because they just picked something cool for the business card? When you're talking about your symbols, it has to be a symbol that makes sense for your company. I could put a bunch of symbols up here on the board and you'd like this. Not only would you know what company it was, but you would attach meaning to it. If I showed you an apple with a bite out of it, what would you know?
Mac.
What would you think? What would you attach to it?
Mac.
Apple. Computer, electronic. Would you begin to attach feelings to it? Mm-hmm. Would there be some people in the room that smiled and got really, really excited about seeing the apple with a bite out of it? And would there be other people in the room that went, oh. There would. You know, if I showed you a set of arches, maybe they were yellow, would you attach meaning to it? Absolutely. What would be the meaning you would attach?
Overpriced burger.
Overpriced burger, is that what you said? Really? Overpriced? Aren't they like $1.60 or something?
Maybe in Florida.
Oh, well, yeah. Maybe in Florida. So overpriced? Maybe that. I will tell you, I do a call because when my nieces were little, that's all they wanted. So I'm sure, you know, it's a wonderful company, it's a great, but when your nieces beg you for it every single day, you're like, oh, for gracious sakes. There's got to be something else.
You're also in the land of In-N-Out here, so.
True. It's a different land, right?
Yeah.
And that symbol would hold a lot of meaning for you here, correct? Isn't it like a triangle-y kind of geometric-y? Because I'll be honest with you, if you showed me that symbol, I couldn't tell you what it meant. But I could tell you what a swoosh meant. Couldn't you?
Yes.
And if I saw three circles attached together, I'd know instinctively what that meant. So the idea around symbols and culture that I want to get to you is don't just have a symbol to have a symbol. Have a symbol because it is indicative of who you are. Because people will begin to attach emotional meaning to those symbols. The same way that we do for Apple, same way that we do for McDonald's, for In-N-Out, for Nike, for Disney. We do that. We attach meaning to it. So make it work for you. Have that symbol be something that really works for you. You know? So that when people see it, they go, oh, yeah, yeah. And then get excited about who you are. All right. I've been talking a lot. It's time for you to have some time to yourself for a moment. What I want you to do, this is your focus. It's on the fourth of the elements of culture, which is traits and behaviors. So I'm going to give you 5 minutes. For 5 minutes, the question to you is, what are the words or phrases that describe your desired culture? That's the traits. And then what are the desired behaviors for your culture? That's the behaviors. So in terms of your culture, this is traits and behaviors. If you're here with people from your organization and you're sitting with them, please talk out loud. You don't have to use this as self-reflection. Talk out loud because you're all here together. You've got 5 minutes.
I forgot to turn it around.